So for those of you who are joining us, very well welcome to you. It's great having you with us. We're doing a series at the moment called The Upside Down Kingdom. And we're going to continue our studies in that this morning. The values of God's kingdom are so often the opposite of what the world says are the values. And when you compare what the Bible says, when you compare what Jesus taught, when you compare how Jesus lived, when you compare what the Bible kind of comments on and promotes as the best way to live, there is often this kind of contrast between that and what the world says is the way that we should live our lives. And so we're doing this series. We started it at the beginning of September. If you want to catch up on any of those, they're all online. And we come this morning to a topic which is really one that is very difficult to talk about in the life of the church. No one really likes talking about this one. I've kind of covered it a little bit in the last couple of weeks when I've been preaching about this idea of giving. But giving and receiving. It's a bit of context for us. I think it's important that we understand why we talk about this, why it's important for us. It's a subject which is not easy to talk about. And I'm conscious that for many people, that they think the church is always after their money. Someone said, just recently I heard them say, the church doesn't need your money, it has enough already. And that's perhaps the perception of the world, is that the church has loads of cash, loads of money, has these buildings, has these houses, has loads of things. What does it need your money for? And let's be honest, in some places and in some contexts and in some church traditions, there has been and is financial abuse. Let's call it what it is. It's out there. People are kind of made to feel like they have to give a certain amount. I remember a conversation I had in this building a few years ago with somebody who had been to another church, and she was not very polite about that church because she'd walked in and she'd been told that she had to give a certain amount of money. And she goes, what's that all about? The church is just after my money. So it's a subject that I know is sensitive, but it's a subject that actually Jesus taught a lot about, as we're going to discover a little bit later. Let me, at the start, help you to understand our context here as a church, because, you know, we think of church and we kind of have perhaps this perception of church. And that's fine, but let's understand what our context is here at Barnwood, because that's the context in which I'm speaking this morning. So we are an independent charity, registered with the Charity Commission in England and Wales. We're part of a federation or fellowship of other Baptist churches across the UK. But the stipends that I and Catherine receive, and I'll talk about that in a moment, are funded not by a central pot, but by the local church. A stipend is not a salary. A salary is you're paid to do a sort of job. A stipend is we kind of give you some money to release you to do your ministry. So you don't have to work. That's the difference. It's a slightly different way of operating. And we have slightly different rules with the HMRC and everything else around that. Part of that is that we get a manse provided for us as well. So we don't own our houses. Well, I don't own our own house. But we live in a house, which is the church's. But that money, the cost of all of that, is borne by the local church. The funding that comes into the local church, therefore, from members of our church family and those who are friends of our church, and we do receive money from people from outside of the church who continue to support us, that is what pays for that. Well, it doesn't quite pay for that, as we know. Those of you who are part of our church family know that it doesn't always quite, the numbers don't always quite stack up. We are in the fortunate position where we can apply for grants because we are working in a particular community around here, and because we did some pioneering work at Marley, that does mean that there are some pots that we can access to help. But over the years, God has very graciously given and provided for this church. If you look at the Charity Commission website, you can go back and look at all our accounts for all the years. They're all on there, if you know what you're doing. And you'll find that we don't have lots of money in the bank. We are not a church that is sitting on a pot of reserves. Okay? We don't have that. And we have never had that. Some churches do have that. We don't. That's our context. At the prayer evening on Friday, I was reflecting on this journey. and on the blessing that it is for us as a church community to have to rely on God. It's not an easy position to be in, to trust God literally every week and every month to meet the, to pay the bills. But that is our reality. That is what it is for us as a church. That is what God has led us into. He hasn't given us a load of money in the bank to sit on and to use. We don't have that kind of nest egg behind us. We just literally have to live hand to mouth. And whilst that's quite stressful at times for some of us, actually, there's a real blessing in that. The challenge for us as a church family is to allow what that experience is for us as a church community to also be our experience as personal Christian disciples of Jesus. What does it mean for me personally to live in complete dependence upon God? There's the challenge for us. Whilst we collectively have that position, do we also have that personally? That's our context. And I say that's important because, you know, people think that church has loads of money. We don't have loads of money, and we do rely on what God provides through the members of the church, through those who come to the church, through friends and others. We have a memory verse which we have been looking at over these last few weeks, which is for September and for October. I'm going to put it up on the screen. I'm not going to ask you to say it. I'm going to put it on the screen and we can read it together because that's probably easier. There we are. Let's read it together. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. In the context of that, Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, in the context of that, what are the these things that Jesus is talking about there? These are words of Jesus to us. These things that he talks about that literally precede this verse are, do not worry about what you will eat, what you will drink, or what you will wear. Jesus says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and those things will be given to you as well. The world values receiving. One of the world's values is about me getting what I deserve. I should get a salary that I'm deserving of. I should get a fair wage. I should get just reward for what I do. And that is the narrative in the world. But what are the values of the upside-down kingdom when it comes to giving and receiving? We have these words from, again, from Jesus in Luke's account. He says this, give and it will be given to you. A good measure pressed down, shaken together and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. It was St. Francis of Assisi who penned the words. This is St. Francis of Assisi. Well, I don't know if that's actually him. It's a statue of him. So someone thinks it looks like him. And this is the prayer that many of us will know quite well. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And right here, right at the end, it's there. For it is in giving that we receive. Now, those words are not in the Bible, but they are summarizing the principle of the Bible. The measure you use will be measured to you. Give and that's it. And it's in giving that you will receive. The measure that we use to give will be the measure that is given to us. But let's take a step back for a moment and go back to the Old Testament and have a little look at what the Old Testament teaches us. I've talked a little bit about this recently. The nation of Israel was divided into 12 tribes, and those tribes had a portion of the land that was given to them. They had cities within that kind of area as well. They had their kind of their provision. But one of the tribes, the Levites, didn't have land. They didn't have cities. They didn't have that space. Well, they had some cities that were allocated to them. They didn't have land of their own. And the people of Israel were then asked to tithe a tenth of their harvest, a tenth of their produce, a tenth of their baked beans and everything else that they kind of harvested, and to bring it all as a tenth and bring it to the Lord as their worship. It was the first tenth of their produce. And that was given, and that was what was provided for the Levites. So if the people of Israel had not tithed, the Levites would not have eaten. That's basically how it would have worked. But it wasn't just the Levites. if you look at the accounts, there's a couple of accounts here, Deuteronomy 14 and Leviticus 27. In those accounts, you find that it's not just the Levites that that received and were benefiting from this tithe. It was also the widow, the fatherless, and the foreigners that were in the land were also able to receive something from that tithe. The tithe is a tenth, and not just any tenth. It is the first tenth. And there is a huge significance in that. Because that first tenth, once you give the first tenth, that's always going to be there. You might go, oh, I'll give the last tenth, and by the time you get to it, actually the tenth isn't there because you've spent it all or other things have happened. But the first tenth is always there. That's not rocket science. That's maths. All right? So when you take your harvest in, the first tenth is already there, and you just give the first tenth to, in this case, bring it to the temple or bring it to the storehouses that were assigned for that. But this was not just a box to tick. This wasn't just something that the Israelites had to do because God had said they had to do it. God says, you know, this is your worship. This is, in doing this, you're recognizing that actually, when you collect in the harvest, that's, you've only got that because God has given it to you. You've only got a harvest because God has provided for you. Seed time and harvest will always continue. There's a promise from right back in Genesis chapter 8, which is read right at the start. The promise is, the Bible is, and the promise of God is that he will continue to provide. So the reason there is a harvest is because God has provided. And so in bringing that and acknowledging that, and offering their gifts to God, there was a gratitude, a sense of gratitude to God for all that they had received from him. So as they were giving, it was a reminder to them of God's provision, of God's faithfulness, of God's care of them, and the way that he had provided for them. But as you saw a couple of weeks ago, and if you want to listen to it, it's there, probably at the start of September, you know, the people of it, the religious leaders had kind of taken this principle of the tithe and had kind of made it something that was becoming like a bit of a rod, a bit of a law. Rather than being a principle, rather than being something that the people were encouraged to do, it now became something they had to do. And they had to enact it in lots of different ways. And what ended up happening was that they ended up tithing literally everything. And as we saw a couple of weeks ago, Jesus says, you know, you're even tithing your herbs and your spices. You're tithing your black peppercorns when you put it in the meal. You know, literally, you're going down to the last, the little minutest thing. You've become so pedantic over it. You've missed the point. The point of giving to God, the tithe, is to give to God, to thank God, and to trust in him for the rest. When you give the first 10%, what happens is you have to reflect on what you do with the other 90%. So it challenges and it encourages us to think differently about what we have received from God. It encourages us to stop and to go, okay, how am I going to use this other 90%? How am I going to live? What choices am I going to make? What am I going to buy? What am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? Maybe we don't wear all the designer stuff because actually that's not good use of the 90%. It's a nice thing, and maybe occasionally we can do that, but ultimately, is that what we do? We've given the first 10% away. It kind of encouraged us to stop and to reflect and to think about the other 90%. And so, as the people of Israel were given this first 10%, it encouraged them to reflect on and to think about and to prioritize how they lived in order to make the other 90% enough for them. So what happens in them coming to the New Testament then? Tithe isn't a word that you kind of come across really in the New Testament. There's a bit in the Gospels where Jesus is saying to the Pharisees, "You've made this a law. You've made this wrong. You know, you're giving one of your peppercorns out of every 10 to me, but your heart is far from me. I want your heart. I want you to worship me. I want you to do it for the right reasons." The only other time we find tithing mentioned in the New Testament is in the book of Hebrews, where it's in relation to Abraham and it's a narrative of what happened when he met Melchizedek. But although Jesus didn't talk about tithing, he talked about money a lot. It was one of the most talked about subjects that Jesus talked about, giving and how we use our money and how we use our possessions. And when we come to Paul, we find again another whole person who kind of encouraged us to think differently about how we give. And so we find these words in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. He says this, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Remember those words from Jesus. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Here we have it. Whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your own heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. And in the story of the early church in the book of Acts, we find these words. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own. But they shared everything they had. Wow. Whose car is it? It's God's car. It's not mine, it's God's. That's the principle here, isn't it? Everything that we have. It's not mine, it's his. I only have a car because God has given me the facility to be able to have a car. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all that there was no needy person among them. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed to anyone who had need. Joseph, a Levite of Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. Wow. That's not a tithe. That's not a tithe. He's not selling one-tenth of his field or one-tenth of all the fields he owns or the land he has. He's bringing the whole lot. That's a whole level, isn't it? Anyway, we'll come to that in a moment as we unpack some of these principles. So what are the principles that we can find in the New Testament? First of all, I think it's important that we recognize that Jesus and Paul encourage us not to make money and things your idol. It's important also to recognize that we can do that whether we have money and things or whether we don't have money and things. So just because you don't have as much as someone else, don't think that money isn't your idol. And don't think that things are not your idol. And by things there, I'm talking about the things that your money can buy. It could be your house. It could be your car. It could be, I don't know, your dinner service. It could be, your, I don't know, whatever it could be. Those things that become so important in our lives. There's so much written about giving from a lot of Christian organisations. And this struck me from the CAP website about giving, Christians Against Poverty website. It says this, God's message about money in the Bible is ultimately that we're not to love money, but instead to be generous with it and to be content with what we do have. Being free from the unhealthy love of money means we don't have to be controlled by it. We can love money whether we have it or not. Therefore, the difference may lie in whether money is a tool that we use or a master we serve. So, first principle, don't make money or things your idol. Second principle, decide what you're going to give. Be intentional. This may sound obvious, but for many Christians, they're not intentional about their giving. Making a decision about what you're going to give is significant. That's the biblical principle. Decide what you're going to give. Don't just give what's left. Make a decision. Make a conscious decision to say, I'm going to give this. Now, how do you make that decision? One of the things is a tithe is a good starting point. I would advocate that. That's something that I use, we use it as a church. It's not a legalistic thing, but it's a good starting point. Some people would embrace that, some people wouldn't. We're not heavy-handed about this, but we're just saying as a principle, it's not a bad place to start. But there's also room for extravagance. You know, those early Christians sold their land. That's extravagance in giving. The story is told by Jesus as he was watching. As he was kind of towards the end of his life, the last week of his life, he was in the temple courts. And he was watching where the people were coming and they were placing their gifts. And these people that were wealthy were coming in and just dropping in their kind of bags of cash, their wadges of notes. And then a little old widow came and placed two little coins in the bowl. And Jesus says, she has given more than these other guys, because she's given everything that she had. It says that she's given the food, that this is what she would have provided for her food. But she's brought it and she's given it to God. This, the extravagance of giving. Again, we're not saying you've got to give X amount of money. We're not saying you've got to do this amount of money. But let's not forget that there's room for extravagance in giving. What does it look like for you? What does it look like for me? With the measure that we use, it will be measured to us. Second principle, therefore, decide what you're going to give. Be intentional about your giving. You know, if you don't decide to give a tithe, just give a little bit. Make a decision and do it. Okay. Third principle, have the right attitude when you give. Did you notice what he said there? Paul says, don't give reluctantly. Don't give through gritted teeth. How many of us end up doing that at times? But to do it cheerfully. Do it with a smile face. Do it as a joy. It's a privilege to give back to God what he's first given to us. Ultimately, everything we have is from him. None of you have what you are sitting in and wearing and what you, unless God has given it to you. And God's provided that. Everything, every good and perfect gift is from above, is what James says. All good gifts around you are sent from heaven above. Everything that we have comes ultimately from him. Someone says, you can't outgive God. So, have the right attitude when we give. Give cheerfully. There's also another principle in Matthew 6 about giving with discretion. You know, don't parade it around. Don't blow your own trumpet. You're not giving to get a big pat on the back. You're not giving to kind of make out that you're something special. Do it subtly. Do it with discretion. It's between you and him, ultimately. And God says, you know, Jesus says, God will see what you do. Your Father in heaven will see what you're giving and will reward you. But don't do it for your own benefit. It's not for your own good. So do it with discretion. So third principle then, have the right attitude when you give. Fourth, give for the right reasons. Our giving should be an act of worship. When we ask what we give, you might have noticed, we don't pass an offering bag around these days. We have a basket, we have a card machine, but a lot of people give by standing, order straight into the bank, which is absolutely fine. But when we do that, it's an act of worship. The challenge for many of us is we do it by standing order and it just goes automatically out of accounts, and it's almost like we forget. You know, I've said this, you know, the sacrificial system of the Old Testament, we've lost something by not having that now. Because if you were having to bring a sacrifice to God, you had to go out into the field and pick your animal. Then you had to come back and prepare the animal and offer it to God. There's a whole process and a journey for us to bring that sacrifice to God. Now, we don't have to do that anymore. And sometimes it just happens and we just don't even notice it. We don't even acknowledge it. You know, and there's good things around that as well. But equally, sometimes we can miss the fact that actually, when that goes, this is our worship to God. We should never give, because we have been told to. Under compulsion, Paul says. We don't want to be a church which tells you you've got to give X amount of money. We don't want anyone to feel burdened by this subject. But it is a subject we feel is important to talk about. We do feel it's a subject which is, there are some good biblical principles for us to understand. But we don't want anyone to feel burdened and pressured into this at all. Don't give under compulsion. But let's see our giving as an act of worship. Final principle, give. Just do it. It sounds obvious, doesn't it? But you'd be surprised how many people I talk to and have talked to over the years who said, oh yeah, no, I intended to do that. I just haven't got around to it yet. And a year later, oh yeah, no, I still haven't got around to it yet. Okay. Just do it. Make a decision, be intentional, and go for it. It's an act of worship. Don't do it because I've told you to do it. Do it as a recognition of what God has first given to you. That everything we have is from him. And our response is to give back to God what he has first given to it. But let's not procrastinate and push it off to another day. Because we're then going to miss the blessing of that. With the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. If you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. If you sow generously, you will reap generously. At this church, at Barnwell Baptist Church, in our two congregations of Howard Road and Marley, we rely on God to provide for our needs. We rely on those who attend the church, who are part of our church family, who are friends of our church, who are on the journey with us and have been on the journey with us over in the past, to continue to honour God and worship God by giving to the church. And in that way, enable us to meet our needs. We're not going to browbeat people into giving. We are going to talk about it, but hopefully to talk about it in a sensitive way, in a way which is respectful. I hope that's what you've heard this morning. But we want to do this in a way which is wise and which honours him. We always encourage members to consider giving. It's part of the membership covenant. We don't tell you how much you have to give. We set out some principles of the Bible. We say, but just make a decision. Decide what you're going to do. And just give it cheerfully. Give it willingly. Give it freely to God. That intentionality of giving the first bit. Now, when you first get your money, at that point, give it. Because then you can adjust your spending. You can adjust your living around what's left. If you wait until you see what's left in your pocket at the end of the month, chances are there won't be much, if anything. Remember the words of Jesus, the words of St. Francis. The measure you use will be measured, it will be measured to you. It's in giving that you receive. So they're the principles that come out of the Bible and the Old Testament. We're happy to talk about it. You know, part of what we do, part of what I have done over the years with people is as they want to talk about giving, is sitting down with them and doing some budgets and looking at their finances and looking at the choices they're making. You know, we're not just going to say to you, right, do it without the support. If you need support around managing your finances, then talk to us. We're happy to help in that way. And some people need that support. They need someone to walk through the journey of choices and decisions with them. You know, we're happy to do that. Because what we want to encourage and allow is for you to experience the blessing of giving to God. Because when you give, God will give to you. That's the principle. When we give, it's an expression of trust in him. When we give that 10% potentially, it's an expression of trust that actually I'm going to give this, knowing that God is going to provide what I need. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you as well. Let's pray.